Welcome back to Experts Only. I'm your host, John Powers. I'm the co-founder of Clean Capital and served as President Obama's Chief Sustainability Officer. On this podcast, we explore solutions to climate change by talking to industry leaders about the intersection of energy, innovation, and finance. You can get more episodes at cleancapital.com. Welcome back to Experts Only. I'm your host, John Powers. Today, we have an annual treat. We're going to talk about the 2024 Sustainable Energy in America Factbook that's put out by the Business Council for Sustainable Energy and in partnership with Bloomberg NEF. This is the best compilation of data in our industry in terms of investment, manufacturing, production, mobility. It covers so many different areas, and it really tells a story that the industry should be grabbing onto. In our conversation, as always, we're joined by Lisa Jacobson, who's the president of the Business Council for Sustainable Energy, and Tara Narayan, who is a senior associate for U.S. Power at Bloomberg NEF. Tara is new to this because Ethan, who took over, used to be at Bloomberg NEF, is now Department of Treasury, helping to get some of the policies we need implemented. But she brings a great perspective, and I hope you enjoy the conversation. As always, you can get more episodes at cleancapital.com. And throughout the episode, we talk about where you can get the fact book. Enjoy. Lisa and Tara, thanks so much for joining us at Experts Only.
Oh, it's so great to be here. Thanks, John.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Tara, welcome to our annual conversation around the amazing work you guys are doing with the Factbook. You know, I think we've had this going on 4 or 5 years, and it's just such positive information and trends in terms of where we're heading. And, you know, overall, I think this is one of the most valuable tools in the industry today for telling people the story of where we're headed. So thank you for the work you're doing on it.
Yeah, no worries. It was fun working on this, actually.
Lisa, just as a reminder to the audience, can you talk a little bit about the Business Council, but also how this Factbook came to be and sort of where we are? I think this is the, 11th?
No, you guys we're in the 12th year.
Oh my gosh.
The 12th year. I know. No, thank you for, obviously, for the attention you give to the facts and looking at the Factbook in particular as a resource. That means a lot. Your view on things is... a keen eye, and, you know, we too share your interest in getting good information about the U.S. energy transition out to lots of audiences. But to answer your question, for those that may not know the Business Council for Sustainable Energy, we are an energy trade association. We're based in Washington, D.C., and we focus on policy, education, and advocacy to support the deployment of low and zero carbon technologies. Our members span companies and trade associations from many different energy sectors, like energy efficiency, to natural gas, to renewable energy, to decarbonization technologies, to sustainable transportation and energy storage. I mean, the list just grows. But I think what's interesting about that, and it certainly is reflected in the Factbook data, is how these individual sectors are working together much more to support the energy transition. It's really a systems-oriented and integrated energy transition.
Right. And it's underway, which is super exciting.
Yes, it is.
To show that. So you partnered with Bloomberg NEF. Tara, for a second, for folks that aren't not familiar, could you talk about Bloomberg NEF, which used to be Bloomberg New Energy Finance, and the role you play in the industry?
Yeah, for sure. BNEF, there's still so many people who say, so you're New Energy Finance, even though we moved it awkwardly to an acronym, Bloomberg NEF. A long time ago, this was a startup that was focused on covering new energies that could be disruptive, primarily focused on things like decarbonization, was then since acquired by Bloomberg. And now we are a market research provider that covers really every aspect of the energy transition. And the aim is to provide, you know, decision makers, companies, utilities, financiers, really anyone in the space, navigate this really sort of complex transition that is happening on multiple fronts. And our main aim is to provide sort of unbiased data and research.
Excellent. And Lisa, for everyone's knowledge, where can they find the Factbook?
We can find it on the BCSE website and also on Bloomberg NEF's website. But I'll just give the BCSE URL, it's perhaps a little shorter. It's www.bcse.org, and then you could just do /factbook, or you can find it easily from our homepage. And the whole Factbook's available for free, but we also have a lot of other tools there. We have videos and, you know, other short, tight resources that get you into the data that you may be interested in finding. So lots of things to share, and BCSE and Bloomberg NEF are happy to work with anyone who wants to get this information out broadly. So
this is for every year. This is one of the best compilations of data that we find out there. We share this heavily internally at Clean Capital. You know, I actually recently had Lynn on talking about what's happening at the state level, and I love that this sort of umbrellas down all together. But so maybe Tara, for a second, where does the data come from that compiles all this? Because I think what's unique about the Factbook is you're pulling in a lot of different threads to put this information out there.
Yeah, so it comes from a number of different sources. A lot of data comes from the US EIA. A lot of it also comes from our own data tracking. So we are a data provider. So we have teams that are sort of, one example is on the clean power side, we're essentially combing lists of, you know, publicly announced wind and solar projects through press releases and company filings and so on. So we use that to supplement data from the EIA. We also look at other industry groups and bodies that may be publishing information. Energy efficiency, for example, comes from ACEEE. And so wherever possible, where we can find a data source that is authentic, government, our own, other industry groups, we compile it all.
So Lisa, looking back,
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say that is one of the really, I think, unique features of this partnership is that it's a two-way opportunity. You know, the industry knows that a lot is changing, but we don't have many resources that knit it all together. And I think for Bloomberg NEF, you know, they continue to evolve and grow their analytic teams, but there may be areas that are relatively small now that are really primed for change, and they get an insight into that from the industry. So it's a collaboration, but at the end of the day, we really value the independent voice of Bloomberg NEF, and we want this to be a Bloomberg NEF product because, you know, we want that validation of the information so that people can feel confident that what they're reading is, you know, not a forecast in this case, and not policy advocacy. I mean, this is really just what are the market trends and why.
Yeah, I use it for policy advocacy, but it's great that it's out there to use it.
We're not advocating for policy.
No, I understand that.
As a tool, but it's, you know, the line's going up, the line's going down. Is that good or bad? And what are we going to do about it, right? Like, that's what we use it for, of course, as well. But not advocating for policy in the Factbook.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I think what's great about the Factbook is that it shows historical trends. It shows things in a way that visually that you really can understand the growth of the space. You know, Tara, as you mentioned, this is really no longer new energy, right? This is about sort of growing in scale, the clean energy transition. And, you know, the whether we're talking about investment, we should talk about manufacturing, you talk about energy efficiency, natural gas, mobility, so many different pieces. And it just sort of highlights for folks in a way that's digestible, which I love. Now I'm going to go back to Lisa, your experience doing this now for 12 years. And, you know, if there was a major theme in this fact book or a trend, you know, last year was a lot about the fact that this is really starting to take hold. You know, is this about scale? Like, what is 2024 telling us?
I think it's about resilience and really the mainstreaming of the energy transition. You know, we still are kind of having the post-COVID response in the business sector, you know, not just for energy, but throughout our entire economy, and not just in North America, globally. So, you know, we have a number of factors that could help or hinder any kind of investment in economic activity. And the energy sector, again, is not immune to those forces. So interestingly for me, was again this continued resilience, and we use the word thriving of the energy transition, and we think the reasons for that are a strong and durable policy foundation. So when we looked at things like high interest rates over the last year, or continued supply chain disruptions, things that could really hamper deployment on a good year otherwise, we saw this kind of three-part reaction. One, things that were already growing really went to another level. Things that were kind of nascent for a long time got a strong kickstart. So overall, I feel like the policy foundation was kind of this armor against these other trends that really would have beaten back deployment. And we had record years yet again in so many areas that we track.
Yeah, absolutely. When you look at sort of policy, I like to say policy, finance, and technology, they're aligned in a way they never have. And now it's about sort of deployment of those technologies out there. And we're seeing, and we'll talk about some of the numbers here in a second, but I do want to talk about policy first, because we are now, well into the both the Inflation Reduction Act and Bipartisan Infrastructure Bill, as well as the CHIPS Act. And how that, those are not independent pieces of legislation. There's a marriage of policy there that's unleashing a lot of exciting things across the landscape here in the United States, whether it be American manufacturing, more projects, more capital. But we're still very early in that implementation. The rules are still being written on tax credits, for instance, right? Or how are you going to get, climate justice or, energy justice into certain communities. Tara, what are you seeing in terms of major steps that have taken over the last year that helped bring forward, for instance, the private sector investment, the policy set up private sector investment at a record-shattering over $300 billion in 2023, right? How is that compared to what you've seen in the past?
So on one hand, I feel like you kind of said it, which is it is record shattering. This is the highest amount that the US has ever invested in the energy transition in the last couple of years. And we are sort of stacking this up across a number of different sectors, looking at, power, as well as investment in electrified transport, as well as in infrastructure. So things like the power grid, as well as the really new nascent sectors like hydrogen and CCS, how much money is going into all of those things. Although to be fair, those are still newer and growing.
Yeah.
And the thing is that, like, when we actually step back and look at the trend across the board, what we saw was that actually every sector had a little bit of a record, and every country, except for one or two, also had records of investment in sort of the energy transition. And so
Yeah.
what that actually told us, and sorry to go off on a slight tangent, is that actually we're kind of at the point where, from a US point of view, both in the 1 year post IRA, there's been a lot of excitement and momentum, and we're starting to see that actually translate to investment. But it's also coming at a time when this picture is also what is happening globally. So really, every country is setting a record, and if we really are to hit net zero, we need to be setting records every year going forward. Like this cannot, like, there's definitely something to pat ourselves on the back for, but
Yeah.
we need to, like, aim on to doing that every year.
And when we look at the $300 billion, that's specifically focused on US private investment, correct?
So the US private investment is, well, we're not looking at private investment. We're just looking at how much money went into the sector, because especially when you look at things like how much money went into building renewables, we can track that on the basis of the final capacity. It's a little hard to disambiguate private
Sure.
versus how much of it was potentially tax credit and so
Gotcha,
on.
gotcha.
But it also includes power grids, electric vehicles.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, is there a number globally? I mean, I've heard when, some of the work that Ceres had done historically, to stay below 2 degrees, we've got to have almost $1 trillion investment a year into the clean energy space. Do you have some numbers for global investment?
So for global investment, I think we estimated at 1.7 trillion. But I think our estimate of how much you would need to invest annually actually is a little bit higher than that. You would need to, like, get into multiples of doubling or tripling the amount of investment to
Yeah.
get to net zero. So definitely a good number. Need to go
But
up.
there's more work to be done, right? So the foundation there, the trends are positive, but yeah, there needs to be more capital to work. So Lisa, let's talk about actually projects going into the ground, because we were also seeing, unbelievable record shattering again amount of deployment in terms of projects being built. Renewables contributed to 23% of total US generation in 2023, the highest ever. I think when you and I started working together over a decade ago, I think we were going to break 20% seemed, unfathomable, right? And the trends are continuing to be very positive. But projects are being built. There's over 42 gigawatts of capacity added to the grid last year. What are some of the things you're hearing from your members that is sort of leading to more and more projects being put in the ground?
Well, certainly the tax extension, you have to go back to, like, post the Inflation Reduction Act. We were looking yet again at a whole suite of tax credits, sometimes that were implemented on and off and retroactively over the last 25 years to be completely gone.
Right.
So to get a 10-year runway on these tax credits and then some opportunity for expansion, which we've had, you know, we've standalone energy storage credit now, we have modernized and expanded carbon capture and storage credit. We have some new fuels credits, and then some of the traditional credits for renewable energy, like the production tax credit and the investment tax credit, are going to transition to this technology neutral approach in the coming years. So, you know, there's just a lot of opportunity there to plan. As you mentioned, some of the changes, along with this 10-year extension and expansion of, and modernization of a number of credits, came new opportunities, new bonus credits or enhancements for domestic content related to employment and labor and apprenticeships, related to where you might have your project. Are you in an energy transition community or an underserved community? So there were these additional elements that were not in the policy previously, which we're currently still refining the rules for. So
yeah.
There, in some cases, there's, you know, a little uncertainty on certain aspects of those, but overall, the market signal is very clear. So I think we saw that in the numbers last year, despite some of this uncertainties, and also despite the fact that we were having a challenging, just broader macroeconomic environment that impacts prices of projects, right? The price to build. So
yeah.
I mean, I'm feeling good about that. And, you know, that is, again, a major foundation for what we saw in the numbers last year, but I think it's only going to, you know, provide a strong foundation in the years ahead.
Yeah, that policy certainty is so key to attracting better capital, right? And the cheaper capital we can get, the cheaper these projects are going to be for off-takers and everyone else. Being in Washington, Lisa, you think you hit on there are some really interesting things in the IRA that, you know, are going to incentivize the correct what we see as the correct policies, which is, you know, whether it be energy transition communities, et cetera. But there's still uncertainty around those policies, right? So as we underwrite a deal or a debt provider underwrites a deal, we just don't know how the IRS is going to look at certain things to date, right? Hopefully our friend Ethan is working on that stuff at Department of Treasury and can move it forward. But being close to Washington, you know, in this really political year, do you see some of those rules coming forward and finalizing this year, you know, just being in the beltway? Like, what are you hearing around some of those?
Well, we're definitely hearing from the Biden administration, whether that be the Department of Treasury, IRS, or the White House and Department of Energy, that they want to finalize a lot of the rules as quickly as possible, right? So that's the word. I think there isn't real interest decoding that is they want to get it done this year to the best extent that they can, but they have so much they're working on all at once. I mean, we could go through a number of different things that we're waiting on. I probably tick through three at a high level, like some of the issues related to domestic content for a number of the credits in their current form haven't been resolved. That's a big issue. A really exciting change, which I didn't mention previously, was the opportunity for non-for-profits to access the tax credits through something called elective pay, which sounds, you know, obviously for the tax folks, they understand that, but maybe for other listeners, like, what is that? But basically, it just enables them to participate in the tax regime. And then, you know, there are things related to the hydrogen credit, which, you know, we have these hydrogen hubs throughout the country. You know, there's a lot of news reports about how they're progressing and kind of this phase they're going into where they're kind of coming up with the first stage of agreements with the Department of Energy. They need to know what the economics of those projects are going to look like. And they're using a lot of different resources, and they were meant to be kind of let many flowers bloom. And so we need to get rules for the hydrogen production tax credit as soon as we can. Now, there's many other things, too, that people are interested in, but those are just three that we're watching very closely right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that one of the most interesting stories of the overall trends that we're seeing is you talk about domestic manufacturing, the demand for those panels, et cetera, in the solar space are way outstripping supply today in terms of what's being manufactured. But we're seeing almost quarter by quarter new announcements being made for new facilities. And you guys talk about by the end of 2023, the number of manufacturing facilities planned in response to the IRA rose to over 104, representing $120 billion in announcements. Tara, can you talk for a little bit about what you're seeing in those numbers? You know, this is solar manufacturing, battery manufacturing happens in places like South Carolina and Georgia, hopefully some in Buffalo someday, we'll see. You know, what do those numbers mean in terms of getting to the supply we need to meet those domestic requirements?
Yeah, that number definitely breaks down differently across different sectors. And so while the most announcements are coming from solar and batteries, the battery announcements are a lot, like, we're generally a lot more like optimistic when we look at the battery announcements, because a lot of them are in partnership with EVs. And there's a number of like EV factory expansions, right, and, you know, upgrades announced as well. But on the solar side, we're like, this is definitely something that needs to happen. But how quickly it will actually materialize and how much of this will materialize is something that I think remains to be seen. Because when you think of the global picture, there's definitely a lot more supply available in other parts of the world. On the solar side, there's in fact significant overcapacity globally. And so while the US definitely wants to strengthen its domestic...
There's overcapacity of panels.
Of panels.
Yep.
Multiple aspects of the supply chain, but panels as well.
Yeah.
And what that's doing is actually pushing prices down pretty significantly for anyone outside the US. But as the US wants to sort of build up and really focus on this domestic supply chain, the trade-off is obviously cost. Batteries, on the other hand, are still a little bit earlier stage in terms of development globally. And so that's one, I think, where there's like a lot more excitement.
And a lot of opportunity to finally lead versus, you know, I think we've unfortunately ceded leadership over the decade to others. We talk, obviously, you're talking a lot about the U.S.-based numbers and what's happening here domestically. And really exciting numbers in there about energy storage, which is now, you know, it's doubling almost year after year. The momentum is, and by the way, we're seeing this in actual projects being financed by clean capital. We hadn't even, you know, we've been looking at this for 2 years. This is going to be a monumental year last year and this year for us actually financing projects. As infrastructure investors, that means these are proven, right? We're not taking high-risk projects. This is about infrastructure. And I think we're going to see more of that moving forward. But even with those numbers, Tara, you know, compared to what we're seeing globally, specifically in China, can you talk about some of the data that you're seeing coming out of China, which really, you know, is a tidal wave compared to sort of the growth that we're seeing here?
Yeah, for sure. Because I think we have this joke internally, which is that when you look at any sector, like, you know, renewables or EVs, or even some of the commodities and, you know, clean manufacturing, China is half of everything. And so it's really something that's like hard to dislodge. But the US is really
including their own demand, right? Their own demand is requiring that. Yeah.
Their own demand is requiring that. But same with, you know, like steel or anything else, right? But I think the thing with the US, at least on batteries, is that it still remains one of the markets that is really attractive for a lot of you know, suppliers to come in and sell. There's continuous demand. And within the US, at least locally, places like California and the Southwest, where there is so much solar, are also where we're able to sort of see this pairing of solar and storage, a sort of natural complementarity that in the past we would look at and be like, well, maybe one day storage will come in and help out solar in terms of overcapacity. And now that's actually starting to happen. And so there's a lot of lessons to be learned in terms of how you integrate batteries with a high renewables grid coming out of the US.
Yeah, I mean, there's still only a handful of states and even nodes that we're seeing projects being built. Right, we're still only on the verge of that really starting to blossom. Lisa, you know, we talked a lot about the positive news, the positive trends. There are some headwinds that you guys point to. I think some of it's some of the enhanced demand we're seeing for electricity, greenhouse gas numbers have been, you know, post the pandemic are coming back up, which is sort of scary, or they had been coming back up. As well as sort of corporate procurement slowing because of the economy. Can you talk about some of the challenges that the fact book points to?
Yeah, I mean, one of the bright stars of the last 5+ years has been that really strong corporate procurement data set that we had.
Yeah.
Looking at PPAs signed each year, it was breaking records every year, it was expanding beyond tech. I mean, a lot of that is still true, but the pace has really stalled over the last year. I mean, it was pretty dramatic from where we were at the end of 2022 to the end of 2023. And I think you hit on some of the dynamics, and I love Tara's perspective as well. But I mean, the pledges that we currently have are still pretty strong demand signals going forward. And, you know, I don't hear around our leadership table any retreat from continued expansion of procurement of renewable energy. I mean, one of the things that we have also been working on over the past year in 2023 has been some of the really strong carbon accounting frameworks, like the Greenhouse Gas Protocol, are changing their rules. We also saw the SEC put out a proposal on how climate risk disclosures would play a role for registrants. And we just, now we're recording this in mid-March, we just saw in the last few weeks the SEC come out with its final rule. So there's a lot going on in the corporate space that could impact how they're thinking about the type of procurements that they would want to make. So I'm hoping it's just a very short-term dynamic, and that we return to an expansion of this marketplace, which has been so valuable. And when you would put the demand forecast from the pledges up against each year's actual deployment, now, of course, the projects don't match for that year, it was basically half of the entire demand was the corporate sector when you looked at the gigawatts installed in a particular year. So this is not just a minor thing. This is a really major driver. So I'm hoping that we'll see a return, but I welcome Tara's perspective.
Can I tell you one thing we see on the ground for Tara, we could see that, is that, you know, when we look back last year was a really bad year in terms of M&A in this space because debt prices went up. As a result, developers' expectations of what they were going to get for their project did not change until the second half of the year. So they didn't realize the debt was significantly affecting how much their value was. We're actually seeing a very similar trend in procurement, where there was so much excitement around the IRA that the corporate procurers themselves, the offices that are become so sophisticated at this, just expected prices to go down. When the reality is we're only, you know, we're still not seeing all the implementation happening. We're seeing a ton of challenges on construction because there's so much infrastructure money being put out for other verticals. You to actually have someone who can build a project in Ohio, the EPC prices went skyrocketing, right? And, you know, we're going to see that continue for a little while as trillions are being poured into infrastructure, right? So, you know, I think hopefully they will reset to understanding the dramatic cuts they were hoping to see immediately aren't going to be there. And they have to realize that PPA prices, for instance, are going to be a little more levelized, and they have to be able to sort of plan to spend if they're going to reach their goals.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like there's two things there. The first, to Lisa's point earlier, one of the reasons there's been a bit of a slowdown in like new commitments to, you know, RE100 or any of those groups is more to do with the fact that a lot of the biggest players have already committed, especially when you think about it globally, like the US has a lot of companies, Japan has a bunch of companies, they've already committed. So new membership is going to slow down. And there's also this growing push around net zero, so more than just renewables. So there's a lot more attention being diverted there. But the commitments are going to drive new demand for at least renewables. And John, to your point, like 100%, we saw this last year as well when we were trying to produce forecasts where just because the costs went down on paper, the supply demand of actual projects that were ready to come online or the supply demand of projects that were ready to sign a PPA, given, you know, the slower pace of interconnection across different ISOs, did not really stack up because there are some things that the policy can definitely help with. So economic problems can be waved away with more tax credits, but non-economic issues like, can you actually move this project forward? Can you get the permits on time? You can't wave that away.
Yeah. And we're also facing, you know, I'm going to sort of, first of all, this is phenomenal. I could talk to you guys all day about this data. But, you know, we are seeing a well-funded anti-renewables push at a local level, cutting off permitting, things like that. Where what I love about the facts book, and there is, if there's a theme for me in 2024, it's fact versus fiction. You have the reason the SEC rule, for instance, got handcuffed as much as it did is because you had ALEC and other organizations pushing out false narratives around what this is going to do for corporate America. We need to be out advocating for policies that we want to see in place to actually help this industry thrive. This gives us the ammunition to do this, right? Facts don't always win. You got to be able to tell the story, but this is great ammunition for helping all of us in the audience advocate for the policies we want to see in place. I know, Lisa, this doesn't advocate for the policies, but we need to. And so I challenge all of us
doing it every day. I mean,
yeah,
that's what we want to do. I mean, and also like in our data, as well as the data of a lot of other industry and non-industry players, is showing where these investments are going. And they are going throughout the country. And, you know, a higher pace right now in what people, you know, refer to as red states, right? So yep. There's a lot of benefit in terms of jobs and economic development going into a broad swath of the country. And we think that is going to be what, you know, pivots the conversation. No one wants to give that up.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So a year from now, when I'm prepping for this interview again and listening to this year's interview, you know, what is the trend we're going to see in 2025? It's coming out of the next book.
I am particularly interested in what happens with the transportation sector. You know, we've got some EPA rules still getting finalized. We, you know, just have a lot of, you know, we're showing the increase in purchases of electric vehicles. We're seeing other things happening in the transportation sector, but we still see this persistent high level of emissions in the transportation sector in the United States.
Yeah.
So I want to see those market trends kind of come together and those emissions numbers coming down. So that's what I'm hoping that we will see. I mean, I guess I would say the same for industrial. You know, we really have seen a lot of activity in the power sector. I mean, we're 40% below 2005 levels. We still have ways to go there, but we're continuing to make strong progress in the power sector. But, you know, if you look at our emissions data, especially industrial and commercial, I mean, they just haven't moved at all. Like they've been the same relative proportion for at least, you know, 10, 20 years. So we got to make progress there, and we definitely need to continue to make progress in transportation.
Tara.
Yeah, likewise. I would say we really need to start thinking about sectors outside of power. Obviously, with transport, more electrification means that transport can sort of piggyback off that decarbonization that's happening in power anyway. But for 2025, hopefully a lot of the tax credit rules would be written. And so sort of this, these like large, impressive sounding announcements that we're hearing around, you know, new tax transfer deals for wind and solar, taking advantage of the tax credit transferability so that you don't have to use tax equity, which is a little more complex. We start to see some of those announcements come through for things like hydrogen and CCS, meaning that actual investment is going into these sectors, and, you know, actual work towards bringing down those emissions is happening.
Excellent. Well, first of all, Lisa, just could you remind the audience where they can find the book?
Sure. On the BCSE website, Business Council for Sustainable Energy, www.bcse.org. And if you want to go one step further, you can do /factbook, but otherwise you can get to it right from our homepage.
And one step further, sign up for a membership and help BCSE be active, which they're doing incredible work. And thank you to both of you for this partnership that you have and the story you're helping to tell for our industry.
Well, thank you, John. Really, it's a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
Yeah. Tara, welcome to your inaugural interview. We'll see you next year for the same conversation when you put this out. And this is my challenge to the audience. As always, this is going to be a year where we need to be fighting for the policies we care about. This fact book gives us the tools to do it. So please go get it, share it within your company. There's great data in there for us to help tell our story. You can always get more episodes at cleancapital.com. I want to thank the team at BCSE as well as Bloomberg NEF and our producer, Colin Young, for helping to put this together. Thanks so much. And I look forward to continuing the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.